Welcome to the DebtWire podcast. I'm your host, Aisha Kelsey, a reporter covering distressed debt and restructuring at DebtWire. Today, I'm glad to be joined by David Hillman, who is the global co-chair of the restructuring group at Proskauer. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks, Aisha. Great to be here.
Today, we're here to discuss the recent Converge One ruling. The left-out lenders walked away with a significant victory in a Texas appellate court where the bankruptcy plan confirmation was overturned. David represented the excluded lender group in the case. David, would you like to start us off with an overview of the case?
Sure. Happy to do that. And I'll try to unpack it for your listeners to keep it simple, but I know you have a sophisticated audience. Converge One filed a pre-pack Chapter 11 in Texas, and it was backed by 80% of its first and second lien lenders. The plan reduced roughly $1.6 billion of debt. And to implement the plan, the company wanted to raise $245 million, and they were going to do this through an equity rights offering. The proceeds of the equity rights offering were used to fund distributions and provide working capital to the company after emergence. So let's drill down on how the equity capital was raised. To raise the $245 million, the plan split the rights offering into two parts, roughly $160 million portion and an $85 million portion. The $160 million portion was offered to all lenders in Class 3. They all had the right to buy reorganized equity, which was being issued at a discount, roughly 35% discount to the assumed plan value on a pro rata basis. This is the open allocation. The other portion of the rights offering, the $85 million piece, that was reserved exclusively for the majority lender group and an insider affiliate. Those same lenders were given the exclusive right to backstop the open allocation, meaning that they alone could purchase any portion that wasn't subscribed. So together, the exclusive investment opportunities, that is both the private $85 million allocation and the exclusive right to backstop the open tranche, allowed the majority lenders to boost their recoveries by about 30% over the lenders in the same class. And there was no market test for any of it. Our group, the excluded lenders, they challenged that the investment opportunities were being offered to a subset of lenders in the class. They argued that by giving some creditors in the class, but not all creditors in the class, this investment opportunity, the plan violated Section 1123A4 of the Bankruptcy Code, which simply requires equal treatment of claims in a class. Judge Hannon, the district court, agreed. He reversed confirmation and holding that the exclusive, non-market-tested investment opportunity were part of plan treatment of the majority lender's claims. He relied on the Supreme Court's decision in LaSalle, the Fifth Circuit's decision in Serta, both standing for the same principle. When value flows because of a creditor's claim, every creditor in that class must have the same opportunity to receive. That's the headline of Converge One. I know there's a lot to unpack there.
Of course, it's a very interesting case. And when we get decisions like this, everybody gets very excited about what's next. So how do you see this ruling influencing future transaction or restructuring support agreements?
I think it really pushes the market to true equality of opportunity within a class. If a debtor wants to offer a rights offering or they want to offer a backstop, it now has to be open to all class members or backed by a market test showing that it's justified. If the benefit flows for or on account of the claim, then it's plan treatment. So the fix is simple. Open it to all creditors or subject it to a market test. Deal politics is not a legal justification. And importantly, the decision doesn't kill backstops. It kills exclusive backstops and investment opportunities that act as hidden recoveries. Equal treatment isn't just about identical payouts. It's about identical access to value. So I think you'll see the influence in restructuring support agreements to structure either equal access or a market test.
It's interesting. And we had this sort of decision this year, and part of this decision was based on that as well. And after it was decided, we started seeing more tiered liability management transactions. which were aimed to gather full participation while still offering different treatments and recoveries among different groups of creditors. Could the Converge One decision impact not only future bankruptcies, but perhaps some of the LMEs that we've been seeing going forward?
This is an important question, and it's hard to answer with certainty. I think Converge One will influence what we will see in the out-of-court LMEs, because one of the criticisms of LMEs is that not all LMEs fix the problem. Some LMEs are a band-aid, and companies that have undergone a liability management exercise wind up still needing the bankruptcy toolbox and filing for Chapter 11. And a lot of the attention for CERTA was about the defined term open market purchase, was really trying to call balls and strikes for an LME using the credit agreement and the credit documents as the governing rules of the road. What is permissible under the parties' agreements? Converge One brings that principle into the bankruptcy practice. So whatever flexibility may exist that could permit a tiered economics in a co-op or in a liability management strategy out of court, the question is, does it carry over into a plan? If parties consent, they're free to consent to inferior treatment. But once the company is a Chapter 11 debtor, 1123A4 imposes a hard equality rule. If you're in the same class, you're entitled to the same treatment on your claim, and there's not going to be an easy way to have value being distributed to some but not all class members. So I think we'll see plenty of out-of-court transaction where admittedly there's contractual flexibility, but that same flexibility does not exist within the confines of a bankruptcy case.
It was actually the perfect leeway to my next question, David. You were saying that equal treatment, but on the other side of things, some steering committee members could argue that they're doing all this work before an LME or a prepackaged bankruptcy, that they deserve some compensation. And what are some other ways that they can maybe increase recoveries that weren't readily addressed in CERTA on Converge One? Or in other words, what's still available that wasn't overruled?
It's a fair question. And I think we will see in the aftermath of Converge One, creative lawyers and sophisticated investors trying to find ways to develop a workaround to what we saw in Converge One. So Converge One doesn't say you can't reward lenders who put in effort. It says you can't hide that reward inside the plan's claim tree. You can't have exclusive investment opportunity. If compensation is tied to their claim, then it violates the equal treatment rule. So what I think we might see is an effort to run a market test. And if a lender, an investor, prevails in a market test to provide cap, and that opportunity, after being market tested, is sought for court approval, that may have a better chance at passing judicial muster because it is the product of a market test as opposed to an exclusive non-pro rata giveaway. I think the bottom line is there probably are ways to reward investors who take risk, but if the fee is exclusive and it's not market tested, it crosses the line from a fair incentive to favoritism.
And like you said, there's a lot of creative lawyers in the market like yourself, so I'm sure we'll see this evolve more and more going forward. But in light of the recent decision, do you think that the negotiation timelines will extend for LMEs or in-court restructurings, given this is the situation where we are now? Maybe you need a market test, or maybe you need to do more due diligence.
I think there may be an extension of the pre-bankruptcy period to allow for a market test when a debtor is looking to raise equity capital to emerge from bankruptcy. That's not every case. So I don't think it'll be fair to say Converge One will extend the planning timeline for every potential Chapter 11 debtor. And we see investment bankers and companies searching for DIP capital, debtor in possession financing, regularly. And I think they're able to layer that search for capital into the cadence of bankruptcy planning without unnecessarily extending the planning phase to a point where it's harming stakeholders. And when a debtor is looking to raise equity cap, there could be basically a small dose of some market discipline to go and shop to get a competitive price check, which is certainly cheaper than litigation in court with a group of minority lenders who feel that they've been left out. And I think now boards and sponsors will ask, can every lender in the class access the same opportunity? And if the answer is no, then the deal should get reworked before it ever is filed to avoid a potential derailment.
Those are definitely fair points, David. And there's one more question that everybody is thinking about, maybe not asking as often, but many recent deals, and when I'm saying deals, LMEs and in-court restructurings alike, included non-pro rata treatment. Very few led to litigation. Do you think that the Converge One decision might encourage more excluded creditors to challenge these deals, since there's more precedent now with both Converge One and CERTA?
Maybe. I know that's not the definitive answer you were looking for. Litigation's expensive. Is the juice worth the squeeze? If you're a minority lender, are you willing to spend 100 cent dollars to fight this fight? That's a hard decision. If you're a repeat player in the broadly syndicated loan market, maybe you have a view that is broader than one particular case to try to establish precedent for the next deal, which maybe you're excluded from. I do think when I reflect on your question about non-pro rata treatment and the potential to increase litigation, I think about what's the next frontier where the battle will be fought. And I think one place we might see an extension of Converge One is with respect to DIP financing and DIP backstops and non-pro rata DIP rollups. I'd be the first to admit Converge One doesn't apply to DIP financing on its face. Converge One was about plans of reorganization. Converge One was about the equal treatment rule under 1123A4, which isn't applicable to DIPs. Now, I think what we might see is some arguments. Parties may try to use the DIP at the beginning of the case to pull forward some of the unequal non-pro rata economics as a workaround to what they can't do under a plan. I think you may see some arguments about Converge One and fairness principles being applied in the DIP context. I don't know if those are going to succeed or not. It's going to be case specific. We saw some of that tension in Judge Goldblatt's American Tire decision. I think it was earlier this year, and the case involved priming DIP and a non-pro rata roll-up that was only available to certain of the pre-petition lenders who were acting as DIP lenders. And the court flagged the unequal economics baked into the financing itself as being violative, at least of the credit agreement. I wonder, does CERTA and Converge One give more fuel to that type of argument? Again, Converge One was about embedded favoritism within a class, but it may shape at how courts look at DIP structures. And if a DIP delivers exclusive economics to a favored few, that could be the next battleground of where this fight is.
Those are definitely some food for thought for all of us. David, thank you so much for your valuable insights. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you.
And also thank you to our listeners for checking out this episode of DebtWire. As always, you can subscribe or download every episode via Apple and find thousands of articles with insights and more from our team on the DebtWire website. See you next time.